The guiding method that we agreed to self respect here than we are in the living ourselves. Depending on how far we are in the living to God in the country. Secondly, HR wants to urge Sanjeev to return to the Ministry of Budget and Council so that he can complete the measure that was before the Ministry of Budget and Council. Secondly, I gave instructions that in the interest of national security, all legal steps to be taken by ourselves to oppose the process march by Sanjeev. This is number 2 of the building. This is what was before. Thirdly, the Department of Defense was requested to look into the matter from a legal perspective and look at the letter that was sent to me by finding the requested reminding me and urging me to make the Department of Defense requested me not to allow Sandy to admit that they were demanding, because Sandy had walked out of the government team, undermining all the services that had led to that point. This in fact would undermine the regulation requiring that we must meet a minimum threshold before they are recognized. The meeting with the minister therefore themselves was inappropriate. What we felt needed to be done was for funding to be urged to go back to the bargaining chamber so that we can resume discussions. Steps taken by the Chief of the Defense Force. Recognizing the previous matter in March, civil union building the Chief of the Army, which is the most affected part of the defense force, issued instructions on the same day, August 19, 2009. That meant no trade union would be permitted to conduct union meetings during the official working hours of the South African Army. And 2, no member of the South African Army would be allowed to participate in strike action or labor unrest. And that should this not be adhered to, severe disciplinary action will be taken against any member who engages in strike or labor unrest. This was disseminated very widely in the army. Sandy responded the following day, August 20th, 2009, to his lawyer, Mr. Ndeyimba. He sent a lawyer letter to myself about the planned protest on the 26th of August 2009. He alleged that the orders of the Chief of the Army were in direct contravention to 2 recent court orders and precedents were granted by the High Court of South Africa. And they were asking us to rescind those orders of the Chief of the Defense of the Army. They also made a reference to a planned protest march scheduled for the 21st, which is the day after the army. They demanded that the order be withdrawn in its entirety and that the subsequent order be issued informing members of the SANDF that they were permitted to conduct union meetings during official working hours and that members of trade unions may participate in marches as visited by the union. That was submission by the lawyer. We responded to that. In my response to the court application, it was argued that the SANDF could not comply with an order that indiscriminately grants soldiers union and mass to go to protest marches, that doing so would compromise national security and that the marches had to be stopped at all costs. After a protracted battle, Judge Patubi on the 26th of August 2009 dismissed Sandu's application with court on the ground that the march was illegal due to the withdrawal of a permit by the City of Kwane Metro Police and that the march constituted the threat to national security. At 10 o'clock, there were very clear instructions from the court provided over by Judge Patubi. 1, the march was illegal, that the City of Kwane having withdrawn its permission on the 25th and widely publicized that the march was illegal. 2, that the march posed a threat to national security of the Republic. And 3, that the public interest was considered to far supersede individual or organizational interest. Therefore, because of that, the court ruled the threat to march out, denied SIU's permission to march to the union building, and the order was handed over to the organizers of Sandy. On the 26th of August 2009, approximately 2,000 SANDF were not sure between ourselves and the police, the police that they were 2,000, we should be interested in more than 2,000. NDF members took part in an illegal protest action which culminated in a march on the Union Building in Victoria. The protest allegedly related to labor issues emanating from their employment as members of the SNDF. This action was preceded by the fact that Sandton had abandoned the negotiations with the budget of Chamber and other federal government. It was also preceded by the fact that I had undertaken in Parliament personally that during the course of this year, our priority was to ensure that the community of any outstanding measures in relation to the commission of service or the defense force would be canceled. On the 25th of August, at approximately 1400 hours, the Fani Metro Police denied Sandton's permission to proceed to the protest march. This was communicated very directly to the leadership of Sandton and communicated to the media. Having been informed that the march had been denied permission by the Metro Police, I specifically sent out a statement by that person appealing to the soldiers not to march, as this would constitute an illegal march and it would be a disregard for the law. I explained to them that we were dealing with a matter that concerned them, and I appealed to them to be reasonable and to desist from protest. This was reported right in the media, but it was reported specifically in the business state. Despite being informed of the court order disallowing the march, Sandu went ahead with the march, with many of the SANDF members armed with inter alia, sledgehammers, handguns, weapons, knives, and other family weapons. Sandu members were brandishing petrol bombs, vehicles belonging to the South African Police Service, and the SANDF and the public were damaged and vandalized by the protesting soldiers. Footage is available if you want to go into the details, which is why we've got it out here, so that you can look into the matter. In summary, in short, members of Sandu are guilty of various serious violations. One, undermining the national security of this country. That's for which the defense force is our duty. The defense force exists for the national security. They undermine that for which they are constitutionally set. Yes. Constitutionally related and obligated. Secondly, marching on a national key point, which is governed by very specific laws, every member of the defense remains. Thirdly, they are guilty of undermining fourthly, they have breached military discipline and the military discipline of the post by being away from their bases without permission. Fifthly, the march was illegal. The Metro Police had not come out to march. Sixthly, they are in contempt of court because the court has expressly refuse the permission to match. Seventhly, failure to obey lawful orders of the police puts the public in the police suffered them first to refuse what unfolded to also on our television screen. Finally, there was outright criminality in that Sandu members armed engaged in acts of vandalism, violence, destruction of property, and threats to human life. On the same day, an emergency meeting was held between myself, the Minister of Police, and his deputy to view the seriousness of the matter. I was called out of cabinet by the Minister of Police to report it to me that this unfortunate raid had occurred on the grounds of the Union Building. We discussed the matter and decided to take immediate action. The Minister of Police instructed the police to ensure that we had all the necessary footage of what happened at the Union Building so we can take the necessary legal steps. I myself issued instructions to the district court and asked them to prepare for me options that would be available for me. But I thought that immediately we needed to have the jurisdiction to do so. Following day, having been received the event on the 26th of August, and having consulted with the Ministry Command Council and its partner's legal team, following conclusions were reached. One, lawlessness and anarchy by uniformed soldiers undermined our children, concurrently undermining the provisions of the Defense Act and the Constitution. Secondly, in view of the seriousness of the matter, I only had two options. It's our obligation by the Constitution and the laws of the country to choose from these two options. One, immediate dismissal of the perpetrator, which is available to us in terms of Section 59, Chapter 2, Clause 3, and common law, for any soldier who poses mass opportunity can be separated from the defense. The second option for me was immediate arrest and court-martialing of the perpetrator, and the consequent trial, also under Section 59. I immediately consulted the President and informed him as the Commander-in-Chief of the Defense Force of the decision and the advice that would be given. He did not hesitate to indicate what he needs to do. Immediate answer, ensuring that we are within the law and giving all the necessary administrative processes time to unfold. Was communicated to the command structure, and with immediate effect, we announced that we would be dismissing 1,300 soldiers from the state. This we have done. So far, we've issued 1,300 letters. This morning, the Chief of the Defense Force informed me that roughly 400 members had responded to their letters. The others have been urged by their unions not to respond to the letters that have been given to them. We have copies of the letters here, which will be available only to members of the stakeholder committee because these are subject to the legal letters that we have, the letters that we sent out to the soldiers themselves. As the situation stands now, we are proceeding with the 400 responses that we received from our soldiers. The Chief of the Defense Force has formed a committee in terms of the administrative regulations that apply in the Defense Force. He will preside over it. He has with him a team of lawyers. He has with him a component of the HR section of the department, and he is hoping that by next week he will finalize it. The deadline for response to the letters that were given out to members of the force is Friday. We are hoping, therefore, to work right through the weekend to ensure that we can finalize the letter as soon as possible. Chairperson, Kim Bailey, simply over the top, give you a global picture of what happened. The deputy and I are available to answer any questions that you might need in the detail of the letter.
Can you really thank you for bringing yourself in the members of parliament, that is the report that has been provided by the ministry. And the ministry is available to answer some of the questions that come from you. And as you have already indicated, that there are issues that are sub-existing. We should find it very difficult to answer a question. It's not that it's undermining parliament. To follow the issue in front of the court, and it would be only easy for them to go into the position. But we really thank you to all for that time that it's really time for us to come and speak to what's going to happen there. Can I give you a message? Yeah, and can I take you with me?
Thank you all
for the
support. I was here last week and I was one student now.
how I was supporting the plan B. Now, I also appreciate the report that they made beforehand. But I have a small question in connection with the submission of the letter from the other. One of the letters, the colleagues, or what is the other? What was that?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the Minister for briefing. I think that there's broad agreement in this room that what happened at the Union Building was an absolute disgrace. The Minister promised quick and decisive action. The Minister delivered quick and decisive action, and for that reason, I'm happy to support it. And I think it's now incumbent on the Project Committee to drill down and to try and find out why this happened in that situation. So I've got five questions. The first Minister is that was there now with the benefit of hindsight. Your opinion, any failure of political leadership or military leadership which may have caused the military union to carry out their protest action at the Union Building? Because, as you correctly said, in your budget speech, you were very clear that human resources was what you called the soft underbelly of the so forth, that conditions of service were a concern to you, and that you received with the matter. And yet, despite that, months later, this unfortunate situation arrived. Also, in your view, and again with the benefit of hindsight, is there an intelligence failure? In the weekend papers, you're quoted as saying, "I didn't know that behind my back this is what they were thinking of doing." Now, what your defense intelligence structures not advised the people of the same force to do, then should you not have been advised that there was a very serious situation in the land? My third question, again, is there anything in the benefit of hindsight that you think that you could have, or whether the military of the same force could have done different that may have averted this crisis? I would be interested in that. And then finally, Minister, it's obviously very important that this missile takes place in a procedurally correct way. And of course, it's imperative that you receive proper and good legal advice. Now, I read the papers that your legal advisor, General Court, full of the demand. I'd just like some reassurance that Tony Demand is not one form of demand that recently the Deputy Registrar at the University of Cape Town. And who rest under a cloud of abandonment disciplinary charges, and who was suspended from a court role in Connecticut after being found guilty of 7 charges of misconduct. The black man is not the same.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to congratulate the Minister on the action. It was the right thing to do. But I also just want to say that Elaine of Crowley for a saying that says that they're from my body in touch. Discipline in the SANDF is not a problem that the third year is. I myself, 3 years, made numerous statements that there's a lack of good discipline in the South African National Defense Force. And I think we only see the result of that lack of discipline that came over the years. So, with that in mind, I want to ask the Honourable Minister, is there a strategy to see how we're going to ensure that we have good discipline throughout the SANDF? That's the first one. The second thing is that the Minister said that according to the estimate there were more or less 2,000 people involved in the march. We've got 1,300 letters issued. What about the others? I know the Minister said that we have some footage. I suppose the members were identified by footage. is there still some other members who still have to be identified, or was it civilians who were part of the march? What happened about, say, the other 600 to 700 people that were also supposed to be part of the march? I will at this stage stop with those two questions.
Are there any other members for the question? Can we welcome Mr. Bido? Mr. Kudeka.
Oh, thanks.
I'll meet you there after and then we'll go for another. If you want to check there, that's my way to
check. From the onset, let me say thanks to the minister for taking that very good information. I just want to know, the minister admitted that already some progress was being made to improve the conditions of the soldiers. Apparently, there was a forum where the minister or the ministry interacted with the union and a progress was registered. What progress was made? Now, coming to Sandu, I would like to know if numerical strength, and also I want to know how many soldiers are unionized in the South African Defence Force. Lastly, this is an appeal that I would like to make to the minister, that much as no one can condone the behavior of the soldiers, however, dismissing them en masse, I don't think it's the best thing to do today. Why is it not the best thing to do? It's because here we're not talking about ordinary people who are going to pretend they street corners and beg. We're not going to talk about, we're not talking about potential beggars here. We're talking about people who have skills and people who can wreak havoc in this country. Should we unleash them on the street? And of course, some of us may be safe from their roads because we live in Acacia Park where the police know that has 24 hours a day. But what about ordinary people out there who don't have some comfort or security? So I think it would be a greater sort of national insecurity to dismiss them. And already from the minister's report, here we are not talking about the best disciplined members of the force. And should we let them loose as things we are going to face dire consequences? And secondly, in about my appeal, the minister not to dismiss them. Is that I think we are all guilty for creating environment for anarchy. Because from day one, when you unionize or we allow the union to work, in the army, that I think is a recipe for what we are reading today. Because their counterparts in the metal industry, their counterparts in the SAR, and their counterparts elsewhere are seen to be going on to employees, wreaking havoc, treating the streets, and from there having their demands met. Now they can't differentiate between them as workers and those people who are working for municipalities who trace the streets, and later on they are having their needs and demands met. So all in all, I think we are partly to blame, perhaps even as parliament, that we said we are going to unionize the army. In the same vein, Madam Minister, I would appeal that, you need a parliament to change laws, but can we have something where we can have a forum in the defense force where soldiers would be represented as soldiers, not as unions, and where even the defense force, the chief of the defense force, so that conditions of employment, salaries, etc., will be fresh out there. Thank you.
Can I just ask you one question? Can you please allow our Secretary of Defense to come and sit there? Just please, I think, Commander Dunn. Done since then is met the Minister of Public Service and Administration. He himself is beyond his capacity of coping with the problems that are affecting. So try and see if we cannot have a separate conversation for the defense, where the defense force has its own version of the public service commission, and it's something that later on I might bring to the have a military commission to deal with the salaries of the defense force and allow a mode of engagement in the defense force which does not result in this kind of humanization we can realize over the past few years. We have something like that. We have been working on that. We have a position paper. We have a discussion with yourself. We intend to take you before cabinet. We have a task force that we have put together between ourselves. From our perspective, how we can deal with these matters. Hoping that the sector and the deputy minister here will deal with what it is that we've been doing in our engagement with the soldiers themselves. And they will do that from the best part of saying what soldiers can be made. What is the numerical strength of Sandu? I have absolutely no idea. I'm informed by the question that Sandu has refused to complete
comply with the regulations that require them on an annual basis to apply for permission to register and therefore give their numerical strength of their members. So this is something that is still a matter of debate. The satisfaction will be able to deal with that matter. What is the numerical strength of soldiers that are unionized in the defense force that has again been important? What are we doing with unleashing people on society? That's a question I ask myself over and over. I want to ask you, what do you want me to do? Keeping these people in the defense force to look after me, keeping these people to look after the kind of arsenal that the defense force has. People who have the final say in the integrity and sovereignty of the country. It is the only institution that the Constitution requires to have discipline to the defense force. I don't remember them saying members of parliament will have discipline. I don't remember them saying that members of the people will have discipline. But they say it will be a professional and disciplined force, the defense force. That's all the Constitution says. The Defense Act goes into detail about exactly what we mean about the discipline of the office from the defense. This is the kind of person that you will come to the defense force. When they come in, they are made extremely aware of what their requirements are. We want people of integrity, people whom we can entrust our defense. People who will look after the tanks, people who will look after the missiles that we have, people who will look after all of the things that we have with the kind of sensitivity and intensity we would like to go to bed knowing this. You want me to keep these people in the defense force? How are we going to assure society that in fact they are protected in our state? I thought about it. But unfortunately, there is a very strict military code that each one of them adheres to when they go to the and they knew it. And they knew when they understood how this was going on, what the consequences were going to be. And as they listed the each 8 violations that we put before them at the same time, and they would know, even as they were not. When they marched in protest against the coalition that they came, why would they have carried cameras and smoke tubes and all of the aftermath that they were carrying? It didn't seem to me that it was either simple or outright attacking them. Unfortunately, there should be consequences that are not pleasant, but things are the consequences. That means you are telling me that the cancer we can testify to from I'm hoping that when they are going to the election, they can rehabilitate themselves, get a job, and get and earn an honest living. I am sorry, you have visited me to discipline and get to work with your wife. I didn't have enough. So again, if you're asking me to reconsider the decision I have taken, which is not only important, for myself, for the second. So that is what we decided. We discussed this matter with the president of the Constitution, and unfortunately, we will not be able to do that. You are asking for not reaching the benefits of having allowed organizations to the defense force. That's what we are, and I am hoping to have to do not too late when we create a different dispensation. For them, like we did in intelligence, that perhaps we might find an environment in which some of these methods can be explored. Please allow me to go to the next one, but I will, if you allow me to accept that, I want to come to many of the things about this. Many of the things about it. I felt this when I was chairperson at the intelligence committee on intelligence, and we crafted the legislation. We really crafted the legislation. At the time, And is there anything that politically we could have done to avert it? I am not aware of it in my time. Before my time, I would not like to make any judgment. I think that you can make up your mind about what we could have done as a government over the past 2 years to create a different environment. Discipline has quite clearly come in that matter, but it's now out there in the public for everybody to see the discipline. In the 3 months that we've been here, I don't think that the discipline has been able to do anything to the doctor. In fact, I want to indicate to you that the first letter that came from Sunday indicating that they are going on strike was on the 1st of April. They hadn't had a school strike before the year. The second letter came on the 9th. So this was a strike that had been planned a long time ago. And this was something that I am informed and I believe that the department was actively involved, especially after I had been told after I had made our public declaration to the team that this is a plan. The method that we've been engaged quite soon. If there are about 1,300 letters that have been sent out, and we estimate that about 2,000 people were out there, are there still more coming? I have no information about that right now. We are working on estimates because this is what we get from the community. We ourselves were not on the team in our capacity as a center. So the information we're working on is the information we get from the team. But those people will be able to identify very clearly that belongs to the South African Task Force are 1,300. There is a question from. To understand that they were determined to go to the and that despite our efforts, despite anything we could have done in history, they would still have gone. So there was no reason to say that. I think it was myself being over optimistic in assuming that, that they understood what we were doing and they were going on with that we were doing everything we could. So that they have a better environment. The fact is because it means that their morale is very important. The fact is because it means that their responsibilities are different. That the government has to have a great time. You asked if my legal advisor is the same one as you were talking about. I think it's the letter quite outside of what we are doing here. My legal advisor is Dr. Ndebele, and I made a request to the president to have the service of my legal advisor, who was mentioned by the intelligence agency and all the representatives. matter we're talking about now, between me and the company that you're with. At another time, we can engage on the policy of the international. I would like, now, if possible, the Deputy Minister and the Secretary to engage with the matter.
You would definitely be interested to see.
Sorry, I just wanted to ask a question. I imagine that you are a policeman and you come up with a crime. The neighbor has shot you once. And you are on duty. What do you do? Do you walk away?
No.
Because it is your responsibility. Mm-hmm. That is what you are entrusted. I want you to hear that in the back of your mind. If you
analyze the process. Thank you, Minister. Can I give the Deputy Minister a question? I'll give you
a thank you, Chair, and colleagues. Minister, through you, just to say a few things around some of the questions raised by members. Firstly, the question raised as to whether there wasn't a failure of political leadership on our part. I think that question is a very important question, in my view. It's a matter which, it's a challenge that belongs to our common province as the Portfolio Committee on Defense, which is in the Parliament and the Minister. Joint responsibility for that political leadership to step to this challenge. And some of the issues, of course, Minister, I think in the fullness of time, be able to bring them to the Portfolio Committee for Parliament's consideration. If I may just be concrete about some of the challenges that one sees and that speaks to political leadership here. It is that, let me start by saying that the minister has referred to negotiations and in the bargaining chamber, suggesting that there were conventional negotiations within the military bargaining chamber. Of course, the choice of words, the minister has been very liberal about what actually happened and what has been happening over time with respect to the relationship between the Department of Defense and this union and SANS. In that, you see, SANDU, the public may not be aware that it's not, as we say, a recognized union within the Department of Defense. Recognized union meaning that a union that has met the stipulated thresholds that is known, and a union that has submitted itself to procedures that commences each year before negotiations commences in the bargaining chamber, among others that they must provide details of their members, they must provide details of their executive leadership, they must provide details about their addresses and everything else that is required, so that it can be established that this union indeed has this many members, and these are the dues paid by these members, and therefore they represent this fraction of the employees of the Department of Defense, and therefore qualifying to participate in the bargaining chamber. SANDU is not such an organization. Not a recognition. It is registered, and registration only means that they receive, they have a number of employees that, according to the department, they are allowed to convene meetings and organize institutions and so on, but not for purposes of negotiation. That notwithstanding, there has been engagement between the Department of Defense with the Human Resource Department with the family. But that negotiation does not, that engagement doesn't qualify to stand as constituting a bargaining chamber negotiation between a recognized union that representing a significant component of the people who are employed by the Department of Defense. Now, you will be aware that there have been a number of cases before that Sandu took to court contesting the space, contesting the space it was alleging that was not being accorded to them by the department. And among the matters that Sandu took to court was the 2007, constitutional case where it was ruled that Sandu has a right to organize the court recognizes that the Sandu has a right to organize and the right to organize protest. We're granted that by the Constitutional Court. And arising out of that decision in 2007, you then saw an unfolding a series of activities that were organized, protests that were organized by Sandu. In the majority of cases, those protests were not speaking to the conditions of service of members. They were addressing all manner of things, even beyond the defense environment. For instance, load shedding blackouts that were happening were among some of the concerns that Sandu was raising in his protest action. But this is a situation the minister is referring to as having created an environment of the deterioration of discipline that we are concerned about. That once the Constitutional Court said Sandu has the right to organize and to organize protest action, they, took it that it meant it was open season for them. And there were a whole range of activities that were now and again organized, which were not industrial action. Industrial action, what I mean by that is action that came as a culmination of a deadlock in negotiations between the employer and the employees on specifically stipulated issues that were being negotiated. None of the actions that Sandu has been organizing around have arisen as a result of that problem. So, you have that problem, but the other development which I want to raise, and we are here talking about political leadership, I'm trying to say that we have, the Defense Department has been dealing with a union which has itself in its activities has not been disciplined about its representation of the conditions of employment of its members. It has been doing all sorts of things and doing them at times when it thought it fit and so on and so forth, not governed by any regulation with respect to all of these things. But the other important one is that, and as a result, you see, in 2002, when Sandu got onto this difficult attitude in its relationship with the department, the minister decided to suspend. It was suspended. And that's what led to the Constitutional Court case of 2007. And the 2007 Constitutional Court ruled to say, Sandu got the right to organize, got the right to process action. And they thought that it means gave them carte blanche, the right to do all sorts of things. But what is again important is that and therefore you're dealing with a union that is really not disciplined in terms of an organization that is there to deal with the employment conditions of workers and negotiating this and trying to find one another with the employer. Because if that was that, if that is what SANDU has been doing, from a political point, the leadership of the Department of Defense can not but treat SANDU as a partner. We need SANDU, and I'm talking a union that represents the interest conditions of certain of members, that as a department, we can engage in an environment where the court has ruled that those kind of organizations must exist within the defense environment. So, as leadership of the department, we are very clear that SANDU is actually a necessary partner. A necessary partner because we do want members of the South African National Defense Force who are happy with their conditions of service and whose morale is high in order for us as an organization and as a department to realize our constitutional mandate. But SANDU has not been helpful in actually getting us to address that. And as a result, we have the kind of problem that we have. In 2009, in January this year, the court again came into the picture, and on a very important matter, that once the relationship between SANDU and the department collapsed, there was no military bargaining chamber that was taken. But then the court said, in order for you to resume normal activities between you, SANDU, the representative of the workers, and the employer, the department, you must have a rules of engagement. The rules of engagement, which is the recognition act, a recognition agreement. A recognition agreement that will contain, when a union signs a recognition agreement, is an agreement that spells out the conditions that will govern its relationship with the employer and how they are going to handle their own business. That court, there was a piece of settlement that the court endorsed. And that piece of settlement, because the court had said to SANDU and the department, go outside and found an agreement that will govern your relationship and bring it here for our endorsement. We did so as a department together with SANDU, and those rules of engagement were taken to court, and the court endorsed them. So there is a deep of settlement by the court to say these are the rules of engagement that you must have. So when we went back from April, when we went back into the negotiation forum with, and I don't know, I'm now currently not saying the bargaining chamber, because SANDU is not a recognized union to participate in the bargaining chamber. In the military, we have agreed in the Department of Defense, to be a recognized union, you must have 15,000 members. And SANDU in 2001 did have those that number. It reached the 2000. In 2001, they did reach the 15,000. But their number has subsequently dropped. According to the department, on the basis of the payment of salaries and the payment of dues done by SANDU members, the department is convinced that SANDU members spend the 12,000. I saw in the paper SANDU saying that they got 18,000. I don't know where they get the 18,000 from, but that is a contested theory. The point that I'm making is that when we now had to resume negotiations with SANDU and having to thresh out the rules of engagement as agreed upon, SANDU then said, no, we want to negotiate the salaries for this financial year, increases for this financial year. 30%, that's what we want. But that's not a problem. For us to have discussions around 30% or 50% or whatever, but the point is, you've got to best agree on the rules of engagement. The recognition agreement has to be signed, so that the rules of the game in the bargaining chamber should be known. At that point, at the last meeting, I think the last meeting was on the 27th of August, that is the SANDU head of the department, they never talked about them going on strike because what they put on the table was not responded to by the department. So the next thing we hear, SANDU is going to be marching. They don't say anything about the agenda on the table at the bargaining chamber. So my point about political leadership, it is for you to judge. whether we've been able to give political leadership or not. These are the issues that are at stake. We have had a union that has been very difficult. Even with the express intention of the department to get, the conditions of employment of our employees negotiated harmoniously with those who purport to be representing workers, it has just not been able to do it. And that is a matter which the portfolio committee, if there's a way in which it can come in on about getting funds to actually appreciate that at this point, until of course we are very clear as a department that the existence of the union is not in the interest of the department of defense, absolutely not in the interest of the department of defense. We will, as the minister has indicated, taking the appropriate steps in law to try and get this matter addressed. But my point is that in the interim, if the study group, the portfolio commission, sorry, of parliament can do something about this problematic union, if you can get them to submit to the deed of settlement of the court that was issued out in January this year, that would go a long way in actually making that easier for the department officers to bring tempers down and to have the situation normalized. Because right now, the impression created is like, the department doesn't want to negotiate with Sandu, don't want to listen to what they are saying. And there are all of these real procedural sound management issues that somebody is astounding at every step. Of course, there are other challenges. The other challenge is that even with that bargaining chamber, the ministry bargaining chamber, if it was functioning properly, if Sandu was a recognized union and we're sitting in the bargaining chamber there, as the military bargaining chamber, we cannot negotiate with those who are representing workers within the different environment outside of what the main bargaining chamber of the public service agreed to as the increment that civil servants will get. So, well, the understanding that we have a chamber, another chamber that then takes forward these matters at the lower level, of course, it may create an impression that the responsibilities of ending up with a different result within the military bargaining chamber when it is not necessarily the case. But that is what you ourselves as people who are paying the oversight and on this policy issue that you have to assist us in. So that's what I would say with respect to this point about whether we've been able to provide political leadership or not. I say that the rules are many and they may not actually be all of them spelled out and discussed in this case today. There are things that we must come back to and look at.
That in fact we were required in the Department of Defense to ensure that we amend our regulations in line with what the Constitution of Court has found. The court was concerned with a total ban on trade unions. However, understood that there is a particular relationship that we have between the National Defense Force and the soldiers. It is not the same as that you can find in the normal work and employer relationship. They urged us to create an environment where it was possible that we give the soldiers the ability to voice their collective bargaining capacity without actually outright giving them the kind of trade union that the trade unions themselves have now defined. In fact, there was a belief in the part of ourselves that at the point that this different judgment was given, we did not actually and apply our minds to it. But we're doing so now, and we are hoping that we are going to be able to get to it.
I think I'm sufficiently covered with the questions that the responses that the consumers and the ministers have already given.
Now, I would give members the last time to do something. I think the particular question.
A very small message is that I also wanted to tell you. There is a question that has been raised here about CCP, raised by the Senior Party. There is a problem of CCP, what strategies one has. It would appear that quite a number of us have come to that look, the people who were involved in the protest march and who have acted unlawfully because there were decisions of the court that they consciously violated. Now, some of them may say this information, the ordinary members of the news did not read them. But the likelihood is that they were aware that they were doing something illegal. We are talking about 3,000 of an organization of 74,000 men. Taking out the civilians, about 15,000 civilians, you're talking about almost 50,000. Now, those who were involved in the march, for the civilian protest march, and they are, to me, a very small fraction of the institution. But that they are a small fraction of the institution, in its entirety, the numbers that we are talking about, does not mean that it is not a matter of, it's not cause for concern. The point that I want to come to is this. For instance, let's take this point that you have members, they are members of the Citizens Force, they have conducted action that they are aware is unlawful. The Department of Defense introduced civic education. The civic education program that was elaborated some years ago, and there was agreement that it must be taken through the ranks within the Defense Force. That civic education program of the Defense Force, among other things, talks about the responsibility of a member. And I remember when that, discussion was, that debate was entertained. There was a very interesting argument there about what extent is a member of the Defense Force responsible for his or her own actions, because he's acting in an environment where they are ordered and discussed. To what extent is he responsible for carrying out a manifestly illegal command? And this took us back to the experience of this country in the era before 1994, in the apartheid days. To what extent are those who were responsible for manifestly illegal activities responsible for taking direct responsibility for that, and what belongs to the command? And with that, according to the United Nations doctrine on this issue, a soldier who takes or who executes a manifestly illegal order cannot be recused himself for responsibility, direct responsibility himself. So I'm just saying that these members, in this civic education, in this awareness, was being built within the Defense Force that you are not going to act and do things that are lawful and say, no, there was somebody who was commanding it. They would have actually been cautious, in my view. You would have had members who are cautious not to, expressly go and participate in an illegal, activity as they have done.
But I can assure you, I'll call you want to go back, but we can talk on that.
It's a question of what instruments do you use to bring about discipline, and what underpins that discipline. Now, here I'm talking about discipline that comes out of awareness of a person's, duties and responsibilities. So, the civic education program is one of the things that, in my view, we are talking about the strategy. There are many things that can be done to improve discipline, but civic education is one of the areas that you must pay particular attention to.
Can I give you something like this?
Mine is not a question. I'm servicing my voice. Mine is not a question, chairperson, but a comment. It's really a comment. You know, the people whom have spoken outside Parliament, ordinary people in the streets, almost all of them are saying, "Hey, Langan, what's happening in the army? What are you came to it?" I say, "What?" He says, "Where have you ever seen soldiers doing what our soldiers have done here? Is this not bordering on mutiny?" These are the questions that arise in the minds of people in the country there. Nobody, the army, many people in the army may have had a case, good reason in protesting peacefully, marching peacefully, to say, "Look, our grievances are not being attended. We want better salaries. I want to agree that their salaries are very, very low. Minister has got to do something about that." And other things which are related to their demands. But the manner in which they presented their case to the government, to the country, by marching on the feet of the government, is horrifying. I think we are all condemning that type of action. I don't want to be very long in the chairperson, but I want to congratulate the minister on the manner in which she has handled this whole issue. Of course, you had, as you correctly said, two options, either to dismiss them from the court or charge them. Charging would have been more serious. So they would have rotted in jail. But if they are dismissed, they can still find some other job. So I think we took a correct line by saying we cannot have such people in our force. It's the NDF, a structure which is supposed to protect the entire country. I think your actions were correct as far as I'm concerned. And the procedures you took. But we must never rely, I never want the court to decide for us. We must never rely on court. If they take us to court, all right, we'll go. But court cannot solve our problems, social, economic, and otherwise. We must never rely on that. We have got to meet people and talk to them. Talk to their minister. I know you have only been in power for 3 months, which is not enough.
I'm sure you changed it to office
and not power. You've only been in office in this department only for three months or so. And they have not given sufficient time to attend to their problems. They have not. You've showed us a letter here that this thing has been planned since April, long even before you came into office to deal with this question, so on and so forth. But, I had discussions with Sandu and Sampu. Both of them sitting here, and the other union saying, "These are the people, Sandu, who started this whole business." They say, "We were not part of it. Although our people went and joined in the march, but these are the people who started it. This organization, this union, which has not been recognized, which has not even met the threshold. Who is behind them? I don't know. I'm still investigating as an individual person. Who is behind them? I don't know.
Deputy Military Intelligence must also sit up and see as to what is happening there. But, Comrade Minister, you have done very well. You and your deputy, you have done very well in handling this matter. And I want to congratulate you. But do try to meet them sometime. Because it can go on, even all revolutions that I know of, they end up by sitting at the round table to discuss matters. So let's try to do that. Thank you.
Thank you,
sir.
This is a long draft now. I want to talk to her, I just want to my colleagues. I don't think that we can keep these people in the HLA. I'm not worried that they will go into society, but if we keep them in the HLA, they will be a bigger threat. Because if you have access to ammunition and weapons, if you give me 5 well-trained soldiers, I will cause havoc in the HLA in the end. It's a genius act. So we cannot have those people, because they've proven that they are not suitable to be soldiers. And when I refer to discipline, gentlemen, yes, we can have a long philosophical debate on the issue and all that sort of thing. But then I also refer to small little things. You know, if we look like how some of our soldiers behave on peacekeeping missions in Africa, it shows that there's a lack of discipline. And I will give you an example. I attended a trip on one of the features. The chief of the Navy, Admiral Maduma, he arrived there, he's not even properly trained. He doesn't even have all his, what can you say, insignia on him. Now, if he's a well-disciplined soldier, you will be proud to wear your uniform correctly. Now, he's the chief of the Navy. He's not even properly dressed. How can you expect his subordinates to be properly dressed? And that's when I also talk about discipline. In the SANDF, you need a special discipline. Because if you're not disciplined, in a combat situation, you're a danger for your fellow soldiers. And we will have to look into that matter. But no, it's not the minister or the new administration's fault. But unfortunately, it's your fault, and we'll have to stop.
Can I give you 1 minute?
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, come here.
Thank you very much. Yes. What I want to request the minister and for the ministry to do is to look at the I know you can finish our day when you finish the check. Because, you know, this is all application. We debated for this thing for quite a long time. And then at the end, we end up with a union. But he has no power to do anything to stop. But I think we have to go back to this debate. Because, to me, I don't know what position is the Kuna, but he's talking for much prior than 1994 in Kuna. But I'm talking about humanization as needed. Because if you talk about humanization in this era, we talk about a training chamber, we talk about the safety condition of employees, we talk about LRA laws and regulations and everything. Therefore, what the Deputy Minister is saying, you cannot negotiate with a person who is neglected now. You don't talk with a person who is neglected now. You just check. Checking is not an agreement. Therefore, we must do a proper thing as the ministry and look at these things correctly. And I think we must prioritize them. If you say a person is a neo-Nazi, you are putting an umbrella somewhere and then you are telling a person what you are not supposed to do.
In my view, the military union giving the same course to me. I hope it could be more clear for myself as minister has announced that she's revisiting the Constitutional Court judgment and researching the relevant regulations. But I want to get back to the question on the leadership level. If you look at the facts that we have before, we know when the minister speaks in April in Parliament that there is deep concern about the service. We know on the minister's account of that that the minister is informed, presumably through the defence intelligence, that there is a serious situation in the defence. The deputy minister tells us that the union, difficult as they are necessary funds. My question then is, given all these concerns, how many times did the minister or that deputy minister meet with you, either in the bargaining chamber or outside the bargaining chamber? It strikes me that had that happened, that may have gone somewhere to cooling the temperature, as you explained, your concern about service conditions, how it was being addressed within the defence force and the military. It strikes me that that may have gone somewhere to cooling the temperature and possibly averting the traction of the
you know the feeling when I open it, whether we like it or not, these things are what we're talking about. Either our brothers, sisters, our neighbors, or whatever, our friends, and we feel that there's no things that have a human duty. Sometimes we as people who are going to be, we call our ears, send people to talk on the phone. I really kind of understand how can people manage to come to Parliament when they don't have consensus and they don't have prices? They don't really do things to the bar from the government. Because now the minister is becoming typically explain what he said in the ministry. Without us having said anything about what our people do, we told us to come in the surrender, staying in the house. Those who have, they put their efforts. Yes, to all of us men who are here, who will discuss them from each political party, and those who say, but I'm appealing to us all to really take care of what people are raising in the family, and not to make them think to live until the peace people. And Mr. Thank you very much for what you have done, but to tell you what is meaning with us, we need to see not what we see. We need to be really acting in quality for the happening. We cannot just be a starter that is doing seriously. We need to deal with the presentation. We hear this thing, we need to when we are getting this thing before. But we tend to choose what maybe they don't include me. It has been it. I'm not saying including this thing. Oh, I feel really intrigued. I feel so bad when I say that to you. Because we are not going to be assisted by media, as media, and even media that is not in the house. We are going to be assisted, not media that is not in the house. It's our own people that are in the house. Let's listen to what people are saying. So, but in any other country, don't you know that class when it is decided to you? Because we are nailing our minister's position. I hope you are going to remain behind next term here and really work thoroughly on everything we have all left by the ministry. All of us going to identify this issue. We cannot attend to for the minister.
Before the ministry goes to some closing remarks, I want to take a look at it. We must have a portfolio committee when the minister raised the fact that he is going to create a special presentation in the party. We are quite confident that the minister realized the problems that are going to be seen in the SAP. And it seems true to him that he was able to bring that to our attention in the country. and been expecting that to be really working with this much. And we don't have to just be working on that. That's why the portfolio committee is really was never supposed to be a minister of the also that that doesn't mean that the minister is saying that we don't have any of the issues for us. But the leadership is you have to leave that out of the country. Ours is to create a business mostly when you put together the people that are going to be in the government. But I don't think that Parliament has we want to get more insight into more operational issues. In your hands, we always rely on you to be successful out of our team. But it is more than that, people are putting the necessary leadership as well. Thank you. We think we all are able to take the independent parliament who are providing leadership. And what we must say is that we will always interact with you. Whenever you feel that call upon us, you do know that the union are kind of interacting with us. We will always decide that some of the work that we have to do one thing like that. And we must really be thankful for the opportunity that we've been provided, looking to the issues and the issues. So that when we get into that, we don't rely on the issues, but we rely on what the needs that we think we could do to our people. And we've always been picking it up from there and how we are going to do it. Members of Parliament have really the opportunity for us to give you an opportunity to get into the debate and hear from the opportunity what it is that we want to do. I'll give to the minister to round up. She has said from day one that there was the main purpose of us in her activity to come to her for any other issue in constitution. Only question of how we must be able to do the minister for the institution. Time again,
we will be working together with yourself. I think I like what the emphasis of the Joint Standing Committee said here about joint responsibility. When we were members of the Joint Standing Committee, Mr. Kimmerer, on set, we took our responsibility, went around to the building. At that particular time, our biggest problem was the integration of the center. And we took an active part in understanding the problems were. We were there trying to ensure that we can get our part of the residents of the people to approach. Perhaps Mr. Mayne, when he had done his walkabout around the border, could also have gone to the basis and dealt with people. And maybe we would have had a different outcome too. We have a joint responsibility. Because the question that he is asking, if we had met the union, perhaps we might have seen the temperature. We discussed this matter again, and I did say that at the beginning of my speech. Right up to the point at which the Sunday walked out of the mountain, we were very close to catching the beast. When they walked out of the mountain, our interest was to ensure that they go back to the mountain. We discussed this matter and the Department of Defense asked us, please ensure that we are allowed to process this matter and get to the finality of this matter before the intervention. One of the things we've also got to understand is the uniqueness of this transport, and I'm also hoping that my the Defense Force is not like the education. There is a very clear command structure in the defense, which should be allowed to hold. Soldier disobeying a particular command, a soldier going behind the clear structures of the Defense Force is undermining the Defense Force. And I don't know if I would be sitting here proudly having undermined the command structure of the Defense Force. I want to make sure I can tighten this because it is only when they're tightened up that we can be talking about this. The member from the IT has been with us over the period that we're talking about, and we just discussed whether we should allow the organization to make the best. I think we will admit that perhaps for this mission, we were magnanimous in some of the rights we see. We misinterpreted the Constitution in some cases, which was perhaps we didn't mean. When the Deputy Minister and I first made our appearance before the Defense Force, we did say that, look, you know, we are part of the people who together with yourself drafted the White Paper on Defense, drafted the first legislation on defense, put in the input on the Constitution on defense. And perhaps we were a little over-optimistic, and if we've made any mistakes, we have yet to rectify them. Then that's what we're doing. If at all we have made a mistake, we are here, I'm glad you are here, you know the history, we will revisit this matter. And if it is in the interest of the security of the country, we are open to that. The letter that Mr. Giambi had wanted, I'm sorry that it took so long, we had to get the letter. This is an administrative matter, and it is important that we understand. My job is a politician to give political guidance to ensure that the Defense Force operates within the mandate and the possibility of the law and the Constitution. But the administration of the Defense Force is very firmly in the hands of the chief of the Defense Force. We together with the Secretary provide so this matter is an administrative matter, and the letter comes from the chief of the Defense Force to each member who has been identified. And it says that in terms of the code of conduct of the South African National Defense Force, we pledge to serve and defend the country and its people in accordance with the Constitution and the law with courage, honor, dignity, and integrity. We participated in a march in which protesters were armed with assortment of weapons, cameras, Molotov cocktails, etc. Said protest march became violent and unruly, which led to the police order that dispersed. We failed to disobey legal police orders. We failed to dissociate ourselves from the violence and unruly protest. This action constitutes a serious piece of military discipline, which rendered your continued employment with the FAMD as impossible. Furthermore, participating, and it goes on. Consequently, in terms of Section 59(2)(e) of the Defense Act, 42 of the 202, read with the Constitution, your service will extend with provision to be terminated. You are hereby called upon to show cause within 10 days of the service of this letter why the termination should not be confirmed as final. Your response should include the following. Detailed response to all allegations set out in the letter, a detailed statement of your whereabouts or activities on the day in question, a detailed explanation why you believe that your employment should not be terminated by the FAMD Act. Unless you will hear from me within the stipulated period herein, the provisional termination shall be confirmed as final without delay. So there are 10 days in which the soldiers are required to write to the chief of the defense force to explain where they were, to dissociate themselves from this, and explain why they participated in this, which is quite clearly in breach of all the regulations that are spelled out in the defense.
Members,
you are
here. Thank you. Can you thank the minister for availing herself with the minister and everybody? We will have our next round tomorrow. Thank you.